The Central African country Gabon looks much the same today as it did centuries ago. It's one of the last areas of Africa to remain largely unspoiled. In the second part of today's Underreported, we'll look into how Gabon has managed to preserve its natural resources, even as surrounding countries are struggling with civil wars and environmental problems. And with me now is Dr. James Deutsch, the Director of Africa Programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society. Welcome.
Hi there. Good to be here.
Isn't Gabon one of the smaller African nations?
It is. It's about the size of Pennsylvania.
And what are its neighbors?
To the north is Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea. To the east, on the right-hand side, is Congo-Brazzaville, and also down to the south as well.
And then there's Congo?
And it doesn't actually touch DRC, which is Big Congo, which is on the other side of Congo-Brazzaville.
But we're still talking about a number of countries that have had turmoil.
Absolutely.
And the turmoil has not spilled over into Gabon?
No, it's a part of the world that still has political problems and has had a lot of political problems. But Gabon has been pretty peaceful. It's had the same government since independence, and it's got a multi-party democracy.
Even though the same man has been in power since 1967, how multi-party can that be?
Well, that's true. I'm not a political expert. I'm sure that Gabon, like lots of African countries, has some ways to go. But it has some stability. It also is blessed, it's a mixed blessing, but is blessed to have some oil. And that oil revenue has been pretty well used. In a lot of African countries, oil is really a curse. But in Gabon, the oil has been used to improve people's quality of life. And so it's one of the few countries in Africa that has a middle income standard of living.
So President Omar Bongo is somebody who actually is concerned about the environment and has instituted more enlightened environmental policies than some of the leaders of other countries around the world?
Well, it's an amazing story because Gabon was actually a laggard in environmentalism and in national parks. Until 2002, it had only one national park, one protected area called Lope in the middle of the country. And so it actually was way behind its neighbors, including both of the Congos and Cameroon, which had quite a lot of parks. But then in 2002, at the Johannesburg Earth Summit, President Bongo, all of a sudden, based on advice from people at the Wildlife Conservation Society and other organizations, decided, and in conversations with Colin Powell, actually, decided that he needed to think further into the future and created this new national park system, which covers about 11% of the country. So really an extraordinary achievement. Some people would say the biggest conservation achievement of the decade.
But it also has a lot of biodiversity. If it was a laggard, how did it manage to preserve so much of its natural environment?
No, absolutely. Several things. First of all, Gabon has a low population density. It's only got about 1.5 million people. And two-thirds of those people live in the three largest cities. And the economy is primarily based on oil, to some extent timber and iron mining. And so as a result, much of the forest had been left intact. And in particular, the bushmeat crisis, which is so much of a problem in Central African forest, with people running out of other things to eat and going in for commercial bushmeat trade, even eating things like chimpanzees and gorillas, which is pretty horrifying to most of us. Gabon, that hasn't been as big a problem because of this smaller population and based in cities.
And is that one of the reasons that it has a healthier elephant population than many African countries do now?
I'd say two things. I think that's one reason. And the other reason is that Gabon is a pretty well-run country. So the armed forces, the police are reasonably well-run. The government is reasonably efficient. And that makes a big difference in preventing people from stealing ivory and shipping it overseas illegally.
Now, you talked about a forest that remains in place. What kind of forest are we talking about? Rainforest?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. This
is a pretty equatorial area.
Gabon lies smack on the equator, and the rainforest, which covers Central Africa, the Congo Basin rainforest, is the second biggest rainforest in the world after the Amazon.
And yet we don't hear about it.
You don't hear that much. You're starting to hear more. And, of course, we who work in conservation are not doing our jobs well if you don't hear about it. So we should be working harder. because it is, it's the second largest rainforest in the world. In Gabon, the rainforest spills right down to the Atlantic Ocean, which is amazing. And because it's in Africa, it has these amazing creatures living in it, elephants and gorillas and chimpanzees and buffaloes and leopards, and really extraordinary.
Species that are endangered elsewhere, are they thriving there?
Thriving might be too strong a term. They're facing some pretty hard problems there, too. I mean, elephants in particular. I mean, estimates are that over the last 20 years, forest elephant populations in Africa have fallen by about half. And they haven't fallen as much in Gabon as they have in the neighbors, but they've fallen quite a lot in Gabon, too. So it's still, there's still some pretty serious threats that we're trying to deal with.
And, of course, when an elephant is on the move, it doesn't realize it's leaving Gabon and going into another country.
No, that's absolutely right. And some of the most amazing areas of Gabon are on the borders with Equatorial Guinea, with Cameroon, with Congo. And we and other people are involved in creating transboundary parks, which both protect the animals as they move back and forth between the different countries, but also which foster cooperation between the countries, because sometimes talking about park management is easier as a starting way for neighbors to talk to each other than talking about more pressing security issues.
And also the use of natural resources. You mentioned that oil revenues have been used wisely here. We did a segment some time back on Equatorial Guinea and how oil has become a major problem for political stability in that country.
In general, oil is a scourge in Africa. When you look at the countries that have oil, Equatorial Guinea, Angola, Nigeria, Cameroon, Libya, Congo, they read out like a list of the countries which are worst governed. And the problem is that if you have oil, it means you don't have to tax your citizens because the oil is worth more to the government than taxes are. And the oil pays for armed forces. And also, the oil comes in giant pots of money from oil companies that land in government offices, and it's pretty easy to lose track of those. So oil is a big problem in Africa, and as the price of oil has gone up over the last few years, it's become even more of a problem. And Gabon is pretty good, but it's not immune either. We've been struggling over the last 2 years with the Chinese oil company Sinopec has been exploring for oil in one of Gabon's most beautiful national parks. And we've been trying to negotiate with them, negotiate with the government, make sure that proper environmental impact assessments are done, and try to balance the understandable wish of the country to cash in on this bonanza with oil prices and to help its people develop, on the one hand, with the fact that they have this forest and these animals, and if 50 years from now they're all gone, the grandchildren of the people running the country now aren't going to be very impressed.
And the trade-off is a very limited one. There are only limited oil resources in West Africa. It's not like the Mideast, where we probably could fuel the world for another 50 years or so.
That's true, but something like, if I remember correctly, within the next 5 or 10 years, the U.S. is expected to be receiving 20% of our oil from Africa, and most of that is from West and Central, from Nigeria, Angola, Congo, Gabon. That's right. So it's not huge by Middle Eastern standards, but you know, Africa is extremely poor, and so these are huge sums of money by anybody's standards, and certainly huge sums of money by African standards.
It's extremely poor. What are some of the other natural resources other than oil?
Gabon has, in fact, their three largest foreign exchange earners right now are oil, iron ore, and timber. And, of course, all of those have gone up dramatically in price over the last few years. And so, again, that dynamic of how much emphasis is there on developing tourism, how much emphasis on conservation and protecting things for the future, and how much emphasis on cashing in for the present, that dynamic is constantly changing. And we're trying to work with them to ensure that the balance is fair.
Well, all of those things are reasons that the environment is threatened in different parts of the world. Mining has been a big problem in the Amazon, for example. And we're talking about a poor country here, Gabon. Why has this been less of a problem in Gabon? Because the population is so small. You said 1.5 million. That's less than most of the boroughs of
exactly.
New York City.
No, exactly. Well, I think until the last 10 years, the development plans have really emphasized oil. Because, first of all, the oil is found along the coast, which means it's relatively easy to access, whereas the iron ore is further inland. And so, for example, the National Railroad is currently being extended right through one of the national parks by the Chinese in order to be able to bring iron ore to the coast. But that's a bigger enterprise. And, of course, until relatively recently, iron wasn't worth a whole lot.
Now, why are the Chinese such a presence there? We've been hearing about the Chinese in Sudan as well. Are they the new Europeans in as far as Africa is concerned?
You know, the Chinese, I have colleagues who work in China, and they would be the first to say that this is not a country of evil people. But it's a country with obviously more people than anywhere else in the world, growing at 10% per year, and with very limited natural resources itself. China does not have enough iron, does not have enough wood, it does not have enough oil to fuel its industrialization.
In fact, it's been relying on coal.
Exactly,
mostly.
Exactly. And so understandably, China has looked around the world, and in Africa, China has found deposits of these things that aren't being well exploited by the West. And China has brought to bear on this an ability to combine. I mean, for example, in Gabon, the Chinese government is able to, on the one hand, give loans from one part of the government. On the other hand, another part of the government can build and extend the National Railroad and help run it. And then a third part of the government can take out the iron ore and then purchase it. So that's not true in the West. In the West, those would be entirely different entities. The West, we couldn't put together a package for a developing country which included loans, building the railroads, operating the railroads, operating the mines, et cetera. So China has a big advantage, and they need the resources. And it's we don't begrudge that. I don't think any of us begrudge China's development. But China seems in a big hurry, and there's a danger that China hasn't had a chance to learn some of the lessons that we in the West have learned with so much difficulty over the last 20 years about protecting human rights and protecting the environment as we go into countries that don't have the capacity to make sure that those things are protected themselves.
So do you think that because China isn't part of the colonial legacy of Africa, in fact, was, if anything, a victim of colonialism itself, does that make African leaders more amenable to inviting them in rather than Gabon, I guess, would be the French who were there, was the colonial power in the past?
African countries are led by a pretty bright group of people. It's not easy to survive politically in that continent. So I think some people do care about the anti-colonial heritage, but I think they also care about who is able to give them a package of loans, of technical assistance, and of markets for their products that will enable them to develop faster and sell their minerals and their oil and their timber faster. So I think China is doing a better job as a customer than we are in that. Also, in some countries where leaders aren't particularly concerned about issues like environmental protection or human rights, they can short-circuit those issues by selling to China. Whereas today, if they go through the World Bank, if they go through the U.S., things aren't perfect, but there are certain constraints in place that we've evolved over the last 20 years.
My guest is Dr. James Deutsch, the Director of Africa Programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society. We're talking about Gabon, which a National Geographic special calls The Last Eden. That program will be broadcast this Friday at 10 p.m. on the National Geographic channel. And since it is The Last Eden, how about tourism? People go to Costa Rica because it's one of the last really pristine rainforests in our hemisphere. Are a lot of people going to Gabon, or is tourism also a threat to this Edenic situation?
Tourism is, in the long run, a crucial part of the equation because, again, I say Gabon is a middle-income country, but in Africa that means $5,000 per year per capita, which is not a huge sum of money compared to what most of us live on in the States. And And if African countries are going to make sacrifices by canceling logging concessions, by setting up national parks, if they're going to make sacrifices on behalf of their own people who are in poverty, then they're going to have to see some kind of financial return over the long run. And there are various ways that could happen. It could happen through carbon credits. It could happen through trust funds. It could happen through support from NGOs, from charities. But the most obvious way it can happen is through tourism. And when President Bongo created the parks in 2002, one of the things he explicitly was aiming for was to eventually replace Gabon's oil income with tourism income.
Since there's been turmoil in some of Gabon's neighbors, usually that spills over across the border in refugee camps. Has Gabon been able to escape that kind of problem?
Yeah, it has, actually. I think because the border areas on the whole are real wilderness. And so they haven't had a huge refugee problem. Fingers crossed.
And
to be fair, there is some serious progress. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, Democratic Republic of Congo, Big Congo, that's the country that used to be Zaire in the middle of the continent. There's still a ways to go, but that country is in so much better shape than it's been at any time since the last 30 years, certainly since I can remember.
Well, we haven't seen a civil war break out as a result of the last national elections,
exactly.
And everybody predicted that it might happen, so they seem to be able to coping with their problems. You've also done extensive work in Uganda, haven't you?
I did. I spent 2.5 years studying for a PhD, watching antelopes in southwest Uganda.
Was that before the real problems developed there?
It was actually after the current president, President Museveni, came in. He came in 85 from Amin and Obote. So actually, I was there in 89. So the country was already beginning to recover from the disasters that preceded it.
And but then there's the Lord's Resistance Army.
Though there's some progress there, too, actually. We're just looking at the possibility of doing more work in northern Uganda because that peace process has made real progress as well, partly as a result of the peace process in southern Sudan. But, you know, I don't pat our government on the back that easily, but frankly, they've done a good job in southern Sudan and northern Uganda and helped broker both of those peace processes, and they don't get that much credit for it.
People in Africa, reasonably, will often gravitate to the places where there's more political stability, and we've seen that as people have moved from Ghana to Nigeria and then back. What about Gabon? Is it an attractive place for people who are tired of living in turmoil?
You're saying for people coming from here or for people coming from the rest
from
of
From other
Africa?
African countries where business people may very well just want to be in a place where there's a certain amount of political stability.
Well, also because it's so much wealthier. I mean, per capita income is about five to ten times its neighbors. So, in fact, there is immigration into Gabon, especially of people seeking relatively low-level employment because the Gabonese are relatively wealthier than they are.
So,
but it's peaceful and it's well regulated.
So this is one of those underreported good stories of Africa. We've had complaints in the past that whenever we talk about Africa, we talk about the bad things, although we did wind up having a complete segment on underreported about all the good things in Africa. Gabon, another one of those semi-happy stories and a semi-what authoritarian country that actually seems to be working?
I guess the real world is always shades of gray, right? It's never pure black or pure white. I think it is a hopeful story. I think the creation of the parks in 2002 was an incredible achievement. And the fact that the country is basically pretty well run and stable is a good thing for the people there. But things are not perfect. Corruption is a problem. The temptation to go back and have exploitation of the oil, of the iron, of the timber, and have that money just go into the hands of the government and not into the hands of the people, and disregard what the future is going to look like, disregard poverty issues, disregard environmental protection. They're all still challenges. So it's a pale gray story. How about that?
Well, I'm sure for many people, it's the first time that they ever heard that Omar Bongo is the president of a country in Africa, and he's been there since 1967.
I'm told that when Castro eventually goes, if President Bongo is still in place, he will become the longest-running leader in the world.
My great thanks to Dr. James Deutsch, the Director of Africa Programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society, for talking about Gabon, which is also the subject of a National Geographic special, Gabon, the Last Eden, airing this Friday, May 18th at 10 p.m. on the National Geographic Channel. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.